Harrison's Back Row with me, Susan Harrison. Happy New Year! This is the first part of a two-part New Year special in which our resident reviewers, Hayley Danks and Ruth Goodchild, review the main cultural highlights of 2014. But before that, I talk to 12-time Swiss hairdresser of the year, the amazing Jean Valjean.
I've been such a big fan of your work because I've just gone through so many different hairstyles in my life.
Yeah.
And I look to you as... well, a guiding light, I suppose. Is that how you...
I think that's pretty common. I mean, look, the thing to remember here, you just said it there. Here's the key. You've been through so many hairstyles. And I would say to you, keep it simple, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you look at some of the most famous people in the world, keep the same style year after year. Let's look tropical. Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-il, all the Kims. Keep it very, very simple because they know what works for them, you know. They don't want to be mistaken for somebody else.
Yeah, and I guess he's very, very sure about who he is as a person and therefore reflects that.
Oh, yeah, well, he's wonderfully decisive, you know. And when he asked me over there just to style him, just to freshen it up, I didn't do too much. And I think that's the key, is that sometimes people do try and do too much.
Politics is no barrier for you, is it? When you, I mean, you mentioned Kim Jong.
I just think hair is a universal language, you know. And why other beliefs, you know, it's the same thing as we saw with Margaret Thatcher. Sometimes people don't agree, but you know, what we can all agree on is whether someone has great hair or not.
And did she?
Well, we'll never know now, but probably.
And how about David Cameron?
You know, I have had a slight falling out. You did just say, obviously, politics no boundary, and I'm perfectly happy to work with them again. I've had a slight falling out because, you know, I tried to put it to David that, you know, actually hair is, could be a real kickstarter to this economy.
Yeah.
Of ours, the problems that we're in. You know, I believe great hair is for everybody, not just for the select few. And he is showing some signs of resistance towards that as an idea. He's cut funding on hair.
Oh,
for starters.
Really?
You know, yeah. You know, he's not going to help you out. And some of the big charities just really neglecting this side of things at the moment. You know, Geldof making a big noise about lots of things. But there are masses of kids out there who can't afford proper haircuts. I want to see that, you know, stamped out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's reflected in your charity, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, my charity, Shave the Children, which, thank you for bringing it up. I'm not here specifically for that, but you know, any excuse to bring that up. Like I say, so many children out there, particularly in Eastern Europe, where, you know, sometimes they don't even finish the haircut properly and they're left with this terrible little tiny, I think they call it a rat's tail.
Seeing as we are here in London, you know, we've mentioned David Cameron. I was interested about your falling out with Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
He was not happy at all with the changes you tried to make to him follically. What can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It wasn't widely reported, but you've clearly, you know, got some inside track there. I did have a little bit of a contretemps, if you will, with Boris. Obviously, I wanted just to rein it in a little bit. He's got it. You know, he's got a lot of hair there to work with.
Yeah.
And I said, Boris, we could really do something here. We could really do something and set an example that he was having none of it. You know, he just wanted to. I mean, in a way, he turned it back on me and said, look, this is my style. This is what people know me for. And it was hard for me to argue with that because it's, you know, practice what you preach, he said to me.
Is that what he said?
Pretty much, yeah. And I really had no answer to that. But I still believe that, you know, we could turn him into a more credible human being for starters, you know, rather than this figure of fun that he insists on being.
Well, exactly. Do you think his hair has potential?
Oh, yeah. Oh, enormous untapped potential. I mean, you've just got to look at it. It's just a crazed mop, messy, you know, hasn't seen a comb in goodness only knows, possibly never. I think that's a real possibility.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a real possibility that that head has certainly never been tamed.
No, and possibly never will. And
possibly this never will, and you know, maybe that's what people like, I don't know.
But equally, maybe it's what's stopping him from the prime ministership.
This would be my point. You know, exactly. That's really holding him back. So, you know, in America, they have such a thing as presidential hair.
Yes, exactly.
We're not quite as hot on it over here, but I think certainly that's something you should think about.
Yeah. And did you spend some time in America when you were growing up, or have you always been...
Not when I was growing up. No, I was, you know, mostly European-based. Went to some American schools occasionally on the continent. But No, I haven't spent a huge amount of time there, although obviously I do look to America, as we all do, for examples of great hair. And I have worked, obviously, with Americans on occasion. You know, Donald Trump came to me years and years ago. And really, that was when I took him from his Boris Johnson stage into what he has now, which he's stuck to.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, you know, like I was saying earlier, you stick to what you know. And that's what Donald has one of the most talked about hairstyles on the planet year in, year out. So
I'm really interested. Oh, it's lovely to hear you talk about hair and so passionately. And I'm really interested about what made you become a hairdresser when you were a child. You know, was there some pivotal moment in your life experience?
I was very, very young when I first started getting into hair.
Yeah.
Partly it was because I was a very shy child. Mm. And my father was a real alternative thinker in a number of ways. Prolific criminal, but a real alternative thinker. And he realized that I had a very difficult time making eye contact with people. So they gave me a mirror to look at people in the mirror, and that was fine. And I could do that. And so, you know, the next logical step really was just to have people sat in front of, you know, hairdressing became a sort of natural avenue into just being able to chat to people, because obviously I was fine in the hairdressing chair. And so I ended up, he said, well, you know, go for it. He was a great one for saying, just go for it. And so, you know, at the age of 7, or even younger, I started cutting people's hair and, you know, messing up. But that's how you learn things. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's so lovely that your parents took that step. And there's some really sweet childhood photos of you kind of riding a bike with the mirror.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's you know, it's
cumbersome. Which was challenging.
But but you seemed to manage.
Yeah.
And sitting in your classroom. Building. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what did the other children think of that? Were they
sympathetic? I think the kids were pretty sympathetic. You know, the teachers, one or two, less so. You know, some pretty abusive teachers, really, just furious that I wouldn't concentrate on maths and all that sort of thing. And I was constantly just doing somebody's hair at the back there. And, livid, John, will you put that hairdresser down? You know, unspeakable threats, really. In this day and age, wouldn't be allowed to happen.
Mm.
But, you know, Switzerland back then was a very different place.
Oh, right, so it was Switzerland was one of
the
European
we moved
schools,
around a little bit, you know. Yeah, as I said, my father, a prolific criminal, so we did have to move around somewhat.
What was your dad's main crime?
Well,
areas of crime?
Mostly fraud.
Mm.
But, you know, he was very good at a lot of things. He trained as a mime.
Oh.
And so he worked out how to extract money out of people for doing very, very little. And he sort of expanded that into a, you know, very prolific criminal enterprise, really. Mm. So we moved countries. He occasionally moved identities. And there came a time where he was not there as much.
Mm. Oh, I see. That's very sad. How was it when, I mean, I know that he had a falling out with Pantene, the alleged money sort of laundering when he was briefly working there. That must have been difficult for you,
but, you
conflict
know,
of...
A little bit, you know, but I mean, by that point, he'd kind of cut himself off from the business a little bit. And, you know, I was, 14, 15 by that point. So I was running things myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to kind of just distance myself somewhat from them. Obviously, the supply issues were a little bit problematic. But fortunately, I managed to speak to the head guys there and iron things out. But, yeah, you know, he undoubtedly caused me a few issues early on with suppliers.
So moving away from that to happier matters, I believe you have a book released.
It's basically just a sort of a beautiful, you know, high production, some black and white, some color, depending on what needs. But you know, some of my favorite cuts and styles, either that I've done, the occasional one from other people, although not so much really, mostly mine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just a book and then a couple of words, a couple of thoughts on what I think about them that makes them so special at the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah.
So really excited just to be pushing that.
Yeah, I mean, flicking through this, there's some great shots, you know, and some great thoughts.
Yeah.
I like this one, which just says clean.
Yeah. Well, I keep saying it, you know, sound like a broken record, but keep to what you know. Mm. Simple. Simple often wins the day. You know, I saw a magazine cover with Rihanna with snakes on her head. It's just not practical.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
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 Mm. Hello, it's Hayley Danks here. and Ruth Goodchild over here.
Really pleased to be back in the bright, bold New Year.
Yes. How were your New Year celebrations?
Oh, my New Year celebrations were amazing. I actually spent them at the bottom of a quarry with just a few friends, sort of getting fucked off our faces. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to swear there.
No, but, I think it really added to the mood. It really helped me sort of get into the mood of New Year's
situation. Of the night.
Because
there was a lot of swearing in the night. So I think maybe I've just carried that through into my sort of essence. I've carried on the sort of gritty language of the quarry. But, you know, it was great. It was just a bunch of artists and creators. And we just, you know, just my friends and all, you know, we're all single, we're all, you know, doing this, that, and the next thing, and just sort of really hanging out, rolling about in the quarry and having a great time.
Because, my goodness, isn't it so predictable to just go down to sort of Trafalgar Square and watch the fireworks? I don't want to do that. That's so predictable, so clichéd.
Total cliché. Yeah. We actually had a tarpaulin over the quarry so as not to see any fireworks, even by accident.
Whatsoever. Yes, good. What happened at the stroke of midnight? Anything special?
Just a lot of sort of caressing and some substances may have been imbibed, and we just sang a cappella, just not even words,
just sounds.
It was very guttural, it was very animalistic.
Did you do sort of consonant sounds as well as vowel sounds?
Rhythmic. We really, I set up a rhythm, and then there was some vowelling over the top of that. All in all, it was like this cacophony of, and it really sort of worked with the surroundings, bouncing off the walls, but sort of being enclosed by the tarpaulin.
That's just really original way to spend New Year, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Thanks, Ruth.
I just slept in. Just went to bed at 8 and just slept through the whole thing.
Oh my God, Ruth, you continuously amaze me with your unique take.
Exactly, I didn't want to be a cliche and sort of leave the house or anything. So I thought, turn that on his head, just stay in, don't see anyone, unplug the phone.
Really?
Yeah.
And switched off the television? I
don't have one.
I switched
off the wireless. Yeah. And I threw my my landline phone out of the window. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So time, for me, for those few hours, time had no meaning.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So it could have been midnight.
I have no idea.
It could have been 20 past 8. It could have been 2015 or 2014.
Exactly. I was in REM sleep by that stage, so I had no idea.
I love that.
Yeah.
And how did you feel? Did you wake up at a reasonable hour? And did you feel any sort of depression?
Well, because I'd thrown my alarm out of the window, so I was late for a meeting the following day. But I thought that was a really sort of exciting, original way to start New Year, by being late to something.
It's anarchic.
It is. It's saying, hey, screw you, 2015. I play by my own rules, sort of thing. Yeah.
And I love it that you'd scheduled a meeting for the next day.
Exactly.
That's so you.
Exactly. It is. Start 2015 afresh, late.
Did you have any, the opposite of what Joe Bloggs would do.
Exactly.
Did you have any special New Year, what did you eat for dinner?
Let me see. I did a really beautiful sirloin steak with sort of veg on the side. I just did it myself. I'm a very good cook.
I know.
I did it in the Arga. And just on my own, I used the best crockery.
Great.
No one could see, which I thought was a good way of sort of turning the Sunday best crockery on its head by not showing it off to anyone, just myself. And got dressed up for the occasion.
Again,
exactly.
Nobody could see.
No one could see.
You definitely weren't going to take a photo of that because, of course, you don't believe in.
Previous listeners will know that I blacked out the windows for Christmas, so I kept that in the teeth. And I was just sort of in a ball gown in my front room. And
I love
what a wonderful evening.
What a beautiful way to spend it. You know, And I loved it that, like, you didn't respond to my text, my New Year's Happy New Year. I knew you hate that. You were like, oh, my God, this is bullshit,
Exactly. I just thought, well, my phone wasn't on, so I only got back. I only got back in the morning when I switched it on. And then all sorts of, I don't know what you call them, little pictures.
Oh, do you mean emojis?
Right. What's all that about?
It's like a really cool way of summing up how you're feeling.
Okay.
So instead of like making it clear within the context of the sentence that something's a joke, now you just can put a yellow face with a smile on it, which and a wink, which indicates that it was a joke. So really, you can say any old crap now, and it's justified.
That's a joke, but with a picture at the end.
Yeah, that's a joke.
Wow.
Or maybe that's a loving sentiment.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe some stand-up comedians should employ that.
Oh,
you know.
Phew.
Yeah.
That's an amazing idea.
So if it's, for example, if it's unclear
whether
they mean what they're saying or whether it's a joke, they could hold up a sign that has a smiley face on, and that tells the audience, laugh now.
Laugh right now.
Laugh right now,
I love that. And similarly, perhaps in a sort of serious play, like with a Chekhov, you could have, they could hold up the symbol of a small poo.
A small
poo. To indicate that it's a really shitty situation.
Bad.
Yes, exactly.
And then, and that would say, audience, this is when you should be crying or experiencing an emotion yourself through empathy.
I love it also, Ruth, that you just said the S-H-I-W-Y.
I did. Do you know what?
I think it's rubbed off on me.
Exactly. I think it was the way you started the show.
With a bang.
With
an effing bang.
With a curse word.
Yeah.
And I thought I would continue that motif.
I love that. Yeah. Is it also one of your New Year's resolutions to swear more?
Now, what do you think about New Year's resolutions?
Well, I'm getting the vibe from you that you, and I remember you saying on a previous year that you detest them.
Well, I prefer to do my New Year's resolutions in June.
Because it's so ahead of the curve.
Because I mean, it's so predictable.
Yeah.
It's New Year's resolutions, so I have to do them in New Year, do I? No, I'm going to do my New Year's resolutions in June. Or maybe at the end of the tax year.
That's a nice way to mark the changing of the year.
The end of the seasons, the tax year. The tax year. A new tax year begins.
Yeah.
Sunrise, sunset.
Oh, lovely. Poetic. So what were your June ones? One was to have a little bit more physical contact in terms of shaking hands.
Exactly.
Yes.
What I normally is when I met someone, I would hold both my hands up by the side of my head, a bit like if someone were pointing a gun at me, and that's how I would greet people.
It was sort of disconcerting.
I'm not going to lie to you
because I'm your friend.
Yes, yeah.
The first time I encountered it, I was disconcerted.
Yes.
But of course, it was also a feeling that was steeped in admiration.
Yeah, because I sort of thought to myself, the history of the handshake is a long one. It was originally to show that you've got an empty hand with no sword in it.
Is that right?
That's actually true.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I'm going to buck that trend completely. And I'm going to, hands up by the head, or just push my palm forward towards someone else in a sort of go-away gesture. The exact opposite of what a handshake
inverted.
Is. Inverted.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And it was great for you as well, because obviously with your phobias, your hygiene phobia, it meant that you didn't have to worry about catching anything from anyone's grabby hands.
Exactly. And people, I mean, I find that people are quite funny about shaking hands with someone who always wears driving gloves anyway. So
I liked that.
Yes.
Yeah, and I appreciated it that you bought me a pair.
Exactly.
In order so that when we would meet, I would of course have to put them on to shake your hand.
Exactly.
And I thought that was quite a nice image.
You know, and they're driving gloves, and yet I don't drive.
Yeah.
So
I love
deal
that.
With that.
Deal
society.
With it, mofos.
Exactly.
And you know, I didn't mind that it was only a sort of, you know, you were buying it for me in the short term and I was repaying you,
a week later.
I was absolutely fine. I thought, yeah, why not?
And
because I know you don't approve of presents, so I was a little alarmed at that. I was like, oh, gosh, Ruth's got me. And then when I realised why, it's a practical thing.
Exactly.
Of course.
And, you know, the fact that you've moved away from that into surgical gloves,
that
disposable, it makes sense. So I really appreciate that.
Oh, no, well, it's fine. I know that it makes you more comfortable. And
Sure.
Okay, great. So we were going to review the year for our listeners.
Yes, the year in culture, 2014 in culture.
In culture. So a lot a lot gone down.
Yes. Should we start with film? Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy was probably one of the biggest releases. Now, I actually haven't seen it, but I don't imagine I would have enjoyed it if I had.
No. I don't think you would have.
No.
I saw the first 2 minutes.
Right.
And then I fell asleep because I was on quite a come down from the after party the night before.
Sure.
So I saw the first 2 minutes.
But you've got the gist.
I mean, you don't need to see the whole thing. Bloody hell.
Who are we? I've got to sit there for 90 minutes. Exactly. I've got things to do.
Exactly.
I've got reviews to write.
No, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, I saw the first 2 minutes. Okay, spacey type of stuff.
Sure, sure, sure.
Not Kevin Spacey, space stuff. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing. Some books and men and some attractive women here and there scattered amongst it. And that was all fine. And then I fell asleep. And when I awoke, the credits were quite nice. They, they weren't overblown. I could read them absolutely fine. You know.
Yeah, I didn't have to look for glasses in order to see them. Yeah. Great,
really clear credits. The clearest credits I think I've ever. The font.
Well, I remember
the
font was. You wrote quite heavily about that, didn't you, in your review?
Yeah, almost exclusively.
Yes, yes, and I think the credits are something that are often forgotten about.
Yeah, I agree.
Reviews, and I think it was great that you made the majority of your review about that.
Well, yes, because as I think you remember when I spoke to you after seeing it, I've never seen a font like. It.
No, no. In fact, I think they came up with the font specifically for
the
credits of the film. How innovative. Now, Chris Pratt, who was the lead, now he lost quite a lot of weight to do that role, which I do admire, but I just think it's a shame that he couldn't lose any height.
Oh, I know.
You know, or gain height. It's this thing about actors, they won't commit that heavily to the role, will they?
No, they won't
stay the same height for all my roles, come on.
That's right. It's like they only think laterally.
Exactly.
Or factually.
Exactly.
As I like to think of it. Exactly. It's all about the fat. How much, how little, rather than, as you say, the height.
The perpendicular element.
Yes.
That's a real shame.
No, I know. It was sort of like a halfway house. In terms of his performance as a result.
Exactly. I mean, does every role that Sandra Bullock plays have to be 5'5"? It's a wasted opportunity.
That's
what I'm saying.
I mean, and also, getting back to his weight loss, I would have liked to have had a section, perhaps in the credits, perhaps right at the end. I mean, you know how I love the credits.
Yes.
But it might have been nice just to see a little, hi guys, it's me, out of character. I just want to say that the way I lost weight was through this means.
Yes.
Great. And then end.
I agree. In fact, what would be I think this would be a wonderful idea. You know how at the end of a David Attenborough documentary, they have a little section where they show you how they filmed everything?
Yeah, exactly.
Why not have something like that at the end of every film?
You know, that would have taken the credits up to an extra level.
Bang. Into the next.
I had them on a 9.5. That would have got them to a 10.
Yes. So a whole section where we sort of just see the composer composing the music laboriously for about 3.5 hours.
Yeah, maybe see.
Ding, 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 ding. Just him playing around with notes or something.
Ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding. Just that. Just the unedited.
Maybe see him wander into his kitchen, make himself a cup of coffee, go back, return.
And then deal with a really tickly cough with some tixy lips or something. And then just got a bit of phlegm.
Tixy lips.
Exactly. A bit of phlegm, get rid of that, and then back to the composing. I'd like to see the unexpurgated. Three and a half, four hours. And that would really bring the film to life.
For me, that would have put a lot of the stuff that I'd seen in the first 2 minutes into context.
Yeah, all of that sort of, all those sort of strange space creatures.
Yeah.
That's all very well, but, you know, what sort of a piano is this composed on?
Exactly.
Was it a Yamaha?
Sort of a mug does he drink out of?
Exactly.
Where does he place it on the keyboard or piano?
Is he left or right-handed?
Is
he the sort of person that holds a pencil in their fingers while they do other things? So he's playing the piano, but he's got a pencil slid through his fingers.
Or is it behind his ear?
Is it behind his ear?
These sort of questions.
Or her. Is it? Could be she. Could be she. Could be a female composer.
Yeah.
You know.
So, yeah, I mean, overall, what would you give that film?
Well, I've not seen it, but I would give it a 2 out of 5.
Okay, that seems fair. Well, on the credits alone, plus the 2 minutes, but especially the credits, I'd give it a 5.
5 out of 5.
Yeah.
5 out of 5. Very high praise.
High praise indeed.
From Hayley.
So another thing happened culturally, which was the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yes. Now, you're going to have to explain this to me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a bit confused by the whole affair.
No, that's fine.
Right.
So basically what it is it's a competition.
Yeah.
Where it's not really...
Is it a competition or a contest? Or does that not matter?
It doesn't really matter.
Okay, sorry. So I just want to get the details.
It's sort of not based... People win, but it's not really based on the merit of the quality of the thing that they're doing.
Okay.
And the thing that they're doing is they're singing a pop song.
Oh, right.
And they're from different countries, and different countries vote.
Okay.
And people say it's political, but I intentionally stay very unaware of international politics,
well,
so I wouldn't be able to.
Why would you want to be influenced by that in your reviewing?
I think
it's important to stay incredibly naive, so that you can bring a fresh perspective to your reviews.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, that's my whole thing, is seeing the world through the eyes of a child,
exactly.
An uneducated, illiterate.
But when you saw
child.
That play about the Arab Spring and your review for that, which
a slinky.
It was a slinky.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was really, that's what I mean, it was really fresh.
Yeah.
It was really fresh and no one was expecting that.
Nate. No, even I wasn't.
No. Your editor.
No, but it made total sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, of course, it got taken on by BuzzFeed and went, you know, stratospheric. So
exactly.
I think my editor was pleased in the long run.
In the long, because it got the clicks, didn't it? It got the clicks.
It's all about the clicks.
That's the important thing, isn't it,
yeah.
In the end?
Yeah.
Rather than content.
And for me, it was very much actually the feeling of a slinky, the feeling that one got, like, despair, a lot of boredom.
Yeah.
The feeling of the slinky making its way down the stairs.
Dickadum. Dickadum. And you don't really know why. You take it back to the top and do it again.
That's right.
What you're basically saying was it was sort of like the Trials of Sisyphus. I think that's what you were going for.
Yeah.
You know.
No, that's exactly what I was going for.
Yeah.
Whereas you, just your review, just compared it to the Trials of
Sisyphus.
And that was a lovely direct comparison.
I mean, I wrote, this is the thing, I wrote 5,000 words, but they edited it down to 100. And so I don't think...
So dull of them.
Exactly. So I published it online.
Yeah.
But it was a real shame because I think it was, you know, it was very dry. I just deliberately made the review as dry.
I loved how you did that.
Exactly.
It made it as boring as possible.
So the people who got to the end really felt that they'd earned it. They really sort of earned that knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I gave them no reason to stick around.
You see, that's what I like about you, Ruth, is that you are uncompromising in your commitment to factual information as opposed to entertainment.
Exactly. I'm not writing this review to entertain you in any way.
No.
I'm not writing it to be interesting.
No, you're not going to pander
to the
fact that people want to be entertained.
No,
I'm not
going to use interesting adjectives. I'm going to use the most obscure words I can find, so you have to go and look them up. It's a challenge. That's why I always feel my writing should be a challenge to read.
You know, it really is.
Yeah.
Especially for me.
Laborious.
Especially for me, who, as you know, we just discussed, I stay deliberately naive.
Exactly.
Deliberately. And so for me, it takes me half an hour to get through one sentence.
Exactly.
You know,
you have to have all your research books,
your
reference books around you in a semicircle.
Yeah.
Sit down to read one of my reviews.
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky thing. Sometimes Wikipedia's not enough for
your reviews. No. I don't use that. So it tends to be sort of old tomes that are now out of print. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. One has to go to a research library too.
I like to use words that are no longer in usage as well, from sort of previous editions of the dictionary.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
You know, it took me 4 months to decode one of your words, which I think actually ended up being Chaucerian.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
If in doubt, I also just make a word up, and so it's a sort of cultural dead end for people, so that they've spent several hours trying to find out what the hell this means. It doesn't mean anything, you know. But you've learnt that.
That you've learned that it means
that it means nothing.
And so you have investigated.
Exactly.
You've come to the dead end, but
you've grown as a person.
You've learnt about yourself en route.
Yeah, I've learnt that I'm really irritated by wild goose chases. That's something I've learnt about myself.
I love that.
Yeah,
I've learnt that. This is a cul-de-sac, and I will pitch up here a while.
Exactly.
And then I will move on swiftly.
Exactly. So I think that's pretty much covered the Eurovision Song
Yeah,
content.
I think so.
So I'm really excited. I'm going to see Jean Valjean. It's not at his hair studios, but it's at his really good friend's hair studios, apparently. And yeah, I've just been really bored with my hair for ages. You know, when it's just sort of flat and doesn't really do anything. So yeah, the opportunity to get a hair restyle from someone as skillful as that is really exciting. So I'm just about to leave the house and go on my journey to meet him. And after chatting to him as well, I've got really high hopes. I think it should be pretty special. So yeah, I'm going to put up some before and after photos. And yeah, okay, off I go. Well, so this is exciting.
Yeah, so we're here now at... I don't actually have a salon in London at the moment. Mine are mostly pan-European, but we've come in here to one of Mario Timotei's salons, which is absolutely fantastic. Old, wonderful friend of mine, Mario, so we can just pop in and use them as needs be. But so what I'm going to do here, just very quickly, I'm going to start just very gently using this technique that I call tickling.
Right.
Tickling the hair, which is just, you know, giving it a wonderful, relaxed, je m'en fous feel. Just using this pair of Jean Valjean tickling tongs, which you can get on my website, very, you know, discounted for the Christmas season. It's a wonderful gift. And really also, all we're going to do, just start gently relaxing the hair. So here we go. Just, you know, forgive me if I go a little bit quiet, just concentrating, you know, really focusing on this, because you do have to be so precise about these movements, you know, because, I mean, for me, hairdressing is a lot like chess. You know, you've got to be 6, 7, maybe 12 moves ahead of the hair, at least, you know. So really just get going and doing this just very, very gently, just really picking out your moves.
Oh, this is great. I'm shutting my eyes at this point because I don't want to give away the surprise.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're going to be... What I would say is, you know, often at the very highest level of performance hairdressing, you are really only getting that sprinkling on the top, you know.
Right.
So when you open your eyes, don't be too surprised if, because you're not a trained hair professional.
Yeah, no, I know.
So
yeah.
Don't be too surprised if maybe you can't see as dramatic a difference as you thought you might. You
okay, know? Well, that's because quite nice when you have a subtle haircut.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's going to be quite subtle. It's going to be just a very, very, very subtle styling.
Yeah, great. Oh, I just can't wait for any sort of change, even, you know, I just want to freshen up, you know.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
That's perfect for just freshening.
Okay.
So we're just still, yeah, okay. So we've done about, all right, we've done about half, I mean, this is going very, very well.
Oh,
firstly,
great.
Let me just tell you that. It's really reacting well to the relaxing tickling. So what tickling is, basically, when I was doing my PhD in crimping and perms with Bruce Garnier, we thought about, you know, what if we reverse that whole idea and really just look at relaxing the hair rather than tightening it up and curling it. So that's sort of what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to repeat this at home with your JVJ tickling tongs, the crucial thing is just to take it very easy, not to do it too hard, or you'll end up with sort of the reverse effect, and that's not what we're looking for here. So just doing it very, very gently, and, you know, coming along very, very well. In fact, you know, nearly finished here. And in fact, I might just add a tiny little pinch of this stuff, which I call Stardust by Jean Valjean, just to give it that little sort of shimmer. Just going to give a little sprinkling over the top like that. Mm-hmm. And that really is just going to set off the effect. You know, it might look a little bit... You might think, again, when you open your eyes, don't be alarmed. You might think it's a bit too much, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know, very, very harsh lights in a salon. Particularly Maria. Maria loves harsh lighting in his salon. I'm a little bit more subtle. But when you get outside, this is really going to work with the sort of wintry tones at the moment. I think, look.
Are you ready? Shall I open my eyes?
I've freshened it up. This is, have a look at this.
I can't wait.
I think you're going to be really excited.
Okay.
Yeah. It's fresh and new. Go.
Oh, wow.
I know.
It's,
Do you see? Because
it sort of looks the same. Is it different around the back?
Or? Very, very similar. But what we've done is we've just given it that tweak, that twist that's going to make it, you know, really new, really fresh.
I mean, I was hoping for something a bit more. I was hoping for a change.
Yeah, absolutely.
this is exactly the same.
Yeah. No. We'll I mean, the word I like to use is similar.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
My pleasure. It's been a delight.
Yeah. You've been listening to Susan Harrison's Back Row with me, Susan Harrison, also starring the amazing Gemma Arrowsmith. You can go to her website, gemmaarrowsmith.com, to find out more about her. You've also been listening to Max Dowler, also known as Jean Valjean, and you can follow Jean Valjean on Twitter, at Really Great Hair, or you can find out more about Max Dowler at his website, maxdowler.com.